Well, hi, I'm Matt, one of the Maybridge staff. Hope you're doing okay today. And if you're just checking us out as a church, you're more than welcome. Find us on Facebook or maybridge.org.uk, and we would love to hear from you, of course. Now, we're continuing our march through Matthew's Gospel, looking at it every week as a church, and I hope you're finding it helpful if you're tracking along. This book is about Jesus, but it's also about what it looks like to follow Jesus in real life and day to day. And sometimes when people talk about what it means to be a Christian, they use the word disciple, which for the most part is a very churchy sort of word. And it can sometimes sound like this sort of mystical, elusive thing for really spiritual people. Or if you don't have a Christian background, the idea of being a disciple maybe sounds weird and religious or even cult-like. But in reality, being a disciple is a very down-to-earth, day-to-day thing. In fact, you could say everyone is a disciple of something, because all of us have things that influence us and things that we put our trust in and shape how we live. The bit of the Bible we're looking at today is Matthew 4, and it says a lot about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. If you're someone who calls himself a follower of Jesus, this should be very challenging. If you're not, then hopefully this will give you a picture of what it looks like, and maybe even think it's something you want to do yourself. So let's read it, and just as a reminder, this is really early in Jesus' public ministry. He's not well known yet, and then this happens. This is in verses 18 to 25. One day, as Jesus was walking along the shore on the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew, throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. Jesus called out to them, "Come follow me, and I'll show you how to fish for people." And they left their nets at once and followed him. A little farther up the shore, he saw two other brothers, James and John, sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, repairing their nets. And he called them to come too. They immediately followed him, leaving the boat and their father behind. Jesus travelled through the region of Galilee, teaching in the synagogues and announcing the good news about the kingdom. And he healed every kind of disease and illness. News about him spread as far as Syria, and people soon began bringing to him all who were sick. And whatever the sickness or disease, or if they were demon-possessed or epileptic or paralysed, he healed them all. Large crowds followed him wherever he went. People from Galilee, the 10 towns, Jerusalem, from all over Judea, and from east of the Jordan River. So this is where Jesus really gets going. He sets things up for the 3 years that will follow this. 3 years where he does things that make him the most famous person who's ever lived, the most highly regarded teacher who's ever lived. And the first thing he does is gather a bunch of disciples, a bunch of guys for his team. And what this passage shows us is the pattern for what it is to be a disciple. And I want to draw out from this just four simple things in particular. First one, disciples leave their nets. So Jesus is walking along the beach at Galilee. He spots these two guys, Simon and Andrew. And Simon and Andrew at this time, they're probably in their late teens, so they're pretty young, and they are professional fishermen. A bit further along, Jesus bumps into James and John. Same story, teenage fishermen. Now, being a fisherman back then would have been tough work. These are not lazy young lads with nothing to do. They're used to getting up at the crack of dawn. They get out on the sea in all sorts of weather, big heavy nets. They haul in as many fish as possible, and then they get it to the market for as much of the day as they can, and obviously bring in money that way. And so when Jesus approaches them, they're not doing nothing. These people are already busy. Now, they probably know Jesus at least a little bit already, and when he speaks to them, they probably know who he is. But they've really got no idea at this moment what they're signing up for. He's an unknown. Now, we know him historically, but at this point, he's unknown. He's dynamic, he's exciting, but really, they haven't got a clue what he's up to. They don't know what he's doing. And as hard as being a fisherman was in its own way, it was a pretty stable job. It was a dependable income, not something that you would just walk away from lightly. There's a reason that Matthew, the author, specifically tells us that James and John left their father Zebedee. It's not just that he's mentioned him because Zebedee's an absolutely brilliant name. It's nothing to do with that. To get up and walk away from their dad basically meant that James and John, symbolically and literally, were walking away from the family business. This was a big deal. How did Zebedee feel about this? Was he pleased? Was he annoyed? We have no idea. But either way, this was a huge thing for these young fishermen to do. It was a huge decision. And whenever a person becomes a disciple of Jesus, they have to first, so to speak, walk away from the nets. not literally, but walking away from whatever their equivalent is. Simon and Andrew walked away from a good job with a steady income, a family business, to go and follow Jesus. Now, we might not need to necessarily do the same with our jobs, of course, but being a disciple of Jesus always begins with stepping away from something. It could be a job, it could be a difficult relationship that influences us in the wrong way, it could be a bad attitude that we hold, there's lots of things, but we never start in neutral. Jesus requires people to give up the life that they have to follow him. The stakes are incredibly high. We will see this all the way through. And for James and John, the cost was really tangible. Their dad was literally sitting in the boat, fixing the nets, as he watched his sons walk away to follow Jesus. Did this mean that they rejected their dad? Did this mean they stopped loving their dad? No, of course not. But it does mean they had to be ready to step away from his expectations, his thoughts on what they should do. And for many people around the world, for hundreds of years, following Jesus has meant being ready to contradict those closest to you, to go against your family, to go against expectations around career and lifestyle choices and all manner of different things. I've met followers of Jesus who have been completely and totally pushed away by their families. I've met many more who simply have a frosty or awkward relationship with family members or with friends simply because they've decided to follow Jesus. And if you're fortunate, it might not cost you any relationships, but if you call yourself a disciple of Jesus and it doesn't cost you anything at all, you've got to question whether you really are one or not. Disciples always have to leave their nets. Second thing, disciples follow Jesus. When Jesus is on the beach and he meets these men, he approaches them, he says, "Come and follow me." Following Jesus is not just about dropping the nets, about discarding some things. It's not about the things that you avoid primarily, the stuff that you don't do. No, no, no. Following Jesus is meant to be a positive. It's an active thing. It's something you participate in. The fishermen drop their nets and they literally, physically, they follow Jesus. They walk with him to wherever he's going. They didn't even know what would happen the rest of that week, let alone the years that would follow. And their lives would be completely and totally changed, of course. This book that we're looking at, Matthew's Gospel, is basically not just the story of Jesus himself, but it's the story, the demonstration of what following him actually looks like. And I really recommend sometime just go through Matthew's Gospel, go through any of the Gospels with a pen and a notepad and note down, what does Jesus actually do with his time? How does Jesus go about real life? What are the things he chooses not to do? What are the things that he prioritizes? It's a really interesting study. These first disciples were glued to him, not literally, for 3 years. They did everything together. It wasn't just a few Bible studies and an occasional worship service. They did day-to-day life together in a Jesus-like way. It was life. It wasn't a compartmentalized religious experience that they just had here and there. In the coming weeks, as we continue this series, we're going to look at the Sermon on the Mount. It's this incredible piece of work, this great summary of all of Jesus' teaching. And the disciples who were around would have heard it loads of times, I'm sure. And it's about everything: relationships, handling money, how to pray, divorce and marriage, issues like that. It's all completely practical and it totally still applies today. That's what these guys were immersed in. That's what being a disciple looked like. As a friend of mine likes to say, Jesus is a genius on how to live. You'd be a fool not to listen to him. But I have to say, I think that sadly, lots of Christians, particularly in our country where it's very easy to do this, lots of Christians, they believe that Jesus is the Son of God, believe that he died for them, believe that God loves them, but they have no desire or plan or intention to actually follow him in everyday life. They're Christians in the sense that they depend on Jesus to save them, they attend church, they're broadly quite nice to people, but their values, their financial decisions, their dreams, their politics are all the same as all of their peers, all the people they know who don't happen to be Christians. And if you're listening to this and you're not a Christian yourself, I just want to say I'm sorry. We Christians can do a terrible job of representing what he's all about sometimes. Please look at him first and foremost and not his followers. It seems to me what's happened to the world in 2020 is a real challenge as to how far each of us actually is a disciple of Jesus. Without the routine, without the helpful routine of gathering to worship on a Sunday, what does your following of him actually look like right now? Of course, it goes without saying, it's totally okay to pine for that moment when we can all get together again. We're supposed to gather in that way, we are, and it's great, and I miss it. I miss all bumping into everybody every Sunday. But we should not be dependent on Sunday services to keep following Jesus. And I suspect that right now quite a lot of us are struggling with a bit of a drift. We're understandably fed up with the situation. Maybe we don't have confidence to get out and about very easily. And maybe we're not talking to anybody beyond the superficial. And maybe we're not opening our Bible. And you know, we're just feeling spiritually lethargic and done in and yeah, a bit fed up. And again, that's entirely unsurprising given the circumstances. But you do have a choice. Are you going to do the things? Are you going to do the things, some of which are a struggle to do, that help you to actually follow Jesus in real life? You do have a choice. Third thing, disciples go fishing for people. When Jesus invites the fishermen to follow him, he doesn't just say, follow me. He tells them what they're going to be doing as they follow him. He says, follow me and I'll show you how to fish for people. I think what Jesus invites these men to is so significant because it puts some flesh on what being a disciple really looks like. I find wherever you go in the world of church, people always have a different emphasis, a different thing that they really like. And for some people, it's all about teaching the Bible really well. If we get that done, then great. For others, it's all about the experience of charismatic worship. And for other people, it's all about exciting community work. And for others, it's all about retreats and contemplative prayer and so on. And obviously, all of these are absolutely brilliant things. And it's natural that some of us are going to gravitate more towards one or the other. That's just what's going to happen. And they're all part of what God wants us to do. But what does Jesus specifically invite his followers to? What is the headline thing that disciples of Jesus actually do, the thing that everything else hangs off? In his own words, following Jesus means fishing for people. What is fishing for people? A lot of people will read this and understand this to basically mean evangelism. It's about telling everybody about Jesus and hopefully seeing them become followers too, which is a great thing. It's a brilliant thing, and just like all the others, but it's actually bigger even than that. It's bigger than that. 20 years ago this month, I went to university, and I'm really glad that I can say I went to university this century. Only just, but it's still true. I went to university this century. And when I went to university back in 2000, I was already a Christian, and I was obviously going to get a degree at the end. That was the plan. And I hoped that would mean, after that, get a decent job, get some good pay. And I didn't really have too much planned for life other than, well, I'll try and live fairly well. I'll probably get married if I can. I'll stick with church. And then I'll muddle along and hopefully I'll die pretty old. And I didn't really think much beyond that. That was the plan. But as I went through university, I met a number of people who were older than me and had been followers of Jesus for longer. And the best way I can put it is they really meant it. They really meant it. I knew plenty of Christians. I've known Christians my whole life. But these were people who had a purpose about what they were doing. They weren't just attending stuff and sort of getting involved in the odd activity that they particularly liked and drifting along. They were actually trying to do something. And what I came to realise was they were following Jesus in fishing for people. There was something that held together all their good activity and how they use their time and so on. And to put this a different way, disciples of Jesus help other people to be disciples of Jesus. And for me, seeing this changed my life. Suddenly, being a Christian wasn't about a sort of private faith where I dipped in and out of church activity as it felt convenient. It was this active thing, this big challenge. You know, would I spend life coasting along, doing some nice things and getting on with people? Or would I go on the adventure? Because it really is that. Would I go on the adventure of joining Jesus in fishing for people? Church is just a vehicle for making that happen. It's the fishing for people that is really exciting. And personally, of course, I'm still trying to work how to do this best. I've not nailed it I'm a long way. But once you see life as this huge opportunity to be part of what God is doing in drawing people closer to himself, it's very hard to be really bothered with anything else. A lot of other things suddenly feel very trivial or uninspiring. And the great thing is, every single one of us has gifts, has strengths to help us to do this, whether it's hospitality or listening to other people's problems or organising stuff well or being willing to have difficult conversations with people. We've all got contributions to make, but the point is not just that we get on with doing our thing that we like doing in isolation. The point is that we work together to help people to grow, to move towards God rather than away. And then we get to grow while we're doing it. When you get it, when this penny drops, church is not just a group of nice people having a nice service, singing their favourite songs. It's a community of disciples of Jesus, working together, using their gifts, supporting each other, but with a very clear overall purpose. Very clear overall purpose. And right now, while we can't easily gather together, and that is tough, it's worth remembering that the early church, the people of the early church that followed Jesus, weren't as focused on worship services as we are. Sure, they had them, they definitely had them. But look through the New Testament. What are God's people doing with their time? They're fishing for people. They're building relationships, talking to people about what they believe, investing time in people, praying hard for people, having meals together. And also sometimes they had worship services too. And that's why for us right now, this is where this becomes very pertinent to what's happening today. More than ever, our church partnership groups are so key right now. With the rules changing all the time, meeting in person has its challenges. Who knows what's going to happen next week, next month. And I know many of us are really fed up with Zoom meetings. I'm fed up with Zoom meetings. But it's worth remembering, this is a technology that did not exist 10 years ago in the way that it does now. And it's an incredible resource to keep in touch. Now is the time to throw yourself into your group and support each other and talk honestly and pray and figure out what following Jesus looks like right now. Because the alternative is a limp, lethargic, really boring faith that isn't going to last very long. If you're not in a partnership group, do get in touch if you'd like to join one. And I know for some people it's really hard to join one because of different circumstances, but find something similar that ticks the boxes. Maybe meet with a couple of other people that you get on with regularly. But please don't bow to the temptation to keep everything social and superficial and without direction. It's fun at the time, and there's certainly a place for just being relaxed and social together. But we're not really helping each other if the spiritual temperature of our conversations is best described as lukewarm. And can I just say in this context, a massive thank you to every Maybridge Partnership Group leader. You probably didn't know at the beginning of the year how it was going to look. And you're doing absolutely great. Everyone else, if you are in a group, please be good news to your leader. Encourage them, thank them for what they put in, show up for stuff when they've made the effort for you. Small groups like these are our equivalent of the group that Jesus and his disciples had. They're absolutely key to us following him together as a church, and right now, all the more. Fourth thing, disciples get to watch. After Jesus recruits these fishermen, he doesn't hang around. He gets on with doing exactly the sort of stuff that he wants them to do. Remember, he said he would show them how to be fishers of people, and then he starts doing it. Jesus travelled around, announcing what Matthew, the author of this book, calls the good news of the kingdom. Jesus is telling everybody, hey, great news. God's ways are breaking into the world, and I'm at the heart of it. Come and get involved. This is brilliant. And he also, of course, meets with all the people that society ignored, and he's involved in healing people and caring for people. Crowds around everywhere, and it's all this really, really exciting thing. Amazing, just unprecedented historical thing. And Peter and Andrew and James and John got a front row seat on all of this. They got a front row seat. Imagine if they'd said no to Jesus' invitation. Imagine if they'd said no. They'd have had nice and very safe and comfortable lives fishing in the Galilee, but they would have missed all of this. And I can honestly say from experience, following Jesus today has some very clear similarities. As we get on with following him, we get to be on the front row while he does stuff in people's lives. It's absolutely brilliant to be part of. It's amazing. And sometimes when you're seeing God do something in someone's life, sometimes it's a great moment. Sometimes it's turning around and seeing the journey somebody has made over a long time. Sometimes it's seeing someone grasp that God loves them for the first time. Incredible. Or sometimes it's maybe giving somebody a leadership opportunity that they're a bit worried about it, they're a bit nervous, they're apprehensive, and then seeing them really thrive and take off. And that's brilliant too. For myself, I look back at the last 15 to 20 years and I cannot believe what God has done with some of the people that I have had the privilege of investing in. My own tiny, imperfect efforts were multiplied. People I've been able to invest in who are now leading in churches and Christian ministries in places around the world. And it's really not because of me. It's really not because of me. I just got to watch while God did stuff. Jesus will do the spectacular in people's lives if you're paying attention and if you're following. But you won't see any of that unless you start following him. You have to do parts 1 to 3 to get to 4. If you don't leave your nets, follow him and join him in fishing for people, you'll see nothing. You might be very comfortable. You might have a nice life, but it'll be a bit more dull and you won't be a participant in what God's doing. The fishermen had to say yes. They had to get on with following Jesus before they saw all the cool stuff happen. And it's still the same now. That's how it is. And so there are 4 things. Leave your nets, follow Jesus, fish for people, and then watch what he does. Leave your nets, follow Jesus, fish for people, and then watch what he does. Now, you might be listening to this today and thinking, this is all quite heavy. You think, you know, I'm just a normal person. This stuff about following Jesus and fishing for people, it sounds really intense and hard. And I have to say, well, there is some truth to that. It is hard to follow Jesus. It's not supposed to be this easy thing. But I want to explain something else, a different dimension to this that I think totally reshapes how we see the whole thing. And hopefully this will be really encouraging. You see, when Jesus asked the fishermen to follow him, he wasn't doing something that was entirely original. It was quite normal for a Jewish rabbi at that time to take on disciples, to take on people to train up with all their teaching. And in Jewish culture, if you were a rabbi, your disciples were like your entourage. They would follow you everywhere. They would hang on to your every word. And it's even said that some disciples would follow their rabbi even when he went to the toilet, just in case he happened to say something really wise while he was in there. I'm not sure how often that actually happened, but that shows you the level of devotion. And normally, the rabbis would recruit the best, most capable, high-potential students they could. And in the Jewish education system, it was a little bit like how in our country we have GCSEs, and then you have A-levels, and then university and so on. And as you go through the system, there are fewer and fewer people who sign up, or maybe are even capable of doing that work. And young children in that society would join what was called Beit Sefer, meaning house of the book. Every child pretty much would do this. They'd learn to read and write. They'd memorise big chunks of the first 5 books of the Old Testament. And the ones who did really well would graduate to what was called Beit Talmud, which meant house of learning. And they'd get more depth. They'd memorise passages of the rest of the Old Testament. And so there was this clear system of teaching people what to us is the Old Testament, and people would move through the system. And after that point, after Beit Talmud, pretty much everybody would go on and do something else. They'd work for the family business. They'd be fishermen and carpenters and so on. And the absolute best students, they would approach a rabbi a bit like applying to a college or a university now, and they'd be rigorously tested to see if they were capable enough of being one of that rabbi's disciples. And of course, this is what every parent wanted for their child. They didn't want their child to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer. They wanted them to be a rabbi. And of course, very few were accepted. And if they got in, there'd be this formal thing where the rabbi would say to the student, "Come and follow me." And then the student would go off and be with that rabbi and learn from them. And they'd copy everything they did until the day when they were allowed to be a rabbi too, and that was prestigious. And of course, what we've just seen Jesus do is very much like that. But I think there are 2 huge and very, very encouraging differences. Firstly, the fishermen must have been people who had already left the education system by virtue of the fact that they were fishing. They were not the top kids in the class. They were not the know-it-alls. They were just ordinary people They were now working in the family business. Ordinary, unspectacular people that Jesus chooses. Very reassuring. Secondly, when Jesus says, come follow me, that was a common thing to say. But the difference here is there's no application process. There's no test of intelligence or memory skills or anything else. It seems like the only thing that Jesus was looking for, the only qualification, was willingness. Rather than go to him and say, please, can we be your disciples? He goes to them and says, I want you on board. He goes for them. He chooses them. By the standards of the time, these guys were the rejects. Not idiots. They ran their own business. You know, perfectly capable guys. But these were not the people who would be expected to be the big, influential high flyers. No rabbi had chosen them. But Jesus does. And these simple young fishermen have become some of the most famous people in all of history, not because they're special, but because they followed somebody who was, because of Jesus. And this is really, really encouraging for us, because it means it does not matter one jot how talented you are. Literally all you need to go on the adventure of following Jesus and fishing for people is willingness. All you need. So you might be listening to this and thinking, well, you know, I'm retired and I've got low energy, or I'm a single parent, or I've got really low social confidence, or I'm in a high-powered job and I'm just really busy already. Or you might even just be thinking, I'm just not very clever, I'm not very knowledgeable. Do you really think any of these things can prevent God from using you? It's not about you, it's about what he can do with you. That same invitation, come follow me and I'll show you how to fish for people, still stands, regardless of who you are. So all you need to do is leave, follow, fish and watch. It's an amazing thing to be part of. So I want to leave you with a few questions to reflect on. Spend a few moments thinking about these. Which part of leave, follow, fish and watch do you get most stuck on? What do you think Jesus would say to this? Second, without gathered church, as we are at the moment, to what extent are you still being a disciple right now? Third, who are you investing time in? Who's around you that you're investing time in and looking to fish for people? And fourth, what does it look like for you to throw yourself into your partnership group or the equivalent right now? And what's stopping you?